This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with some of the members of the Videri String Quartet, violinist Matthias Souza, violist Rosie Samter, cellist Jeremiah Barkas, violinist Chris Ferreira, who is part of the quartet, is on sabbatical right now, but helping out with this incredible project that we're going to be talking about is violinist Eli Bishop. And so let's just do a quick group. Hi, it's great to talk to all of you.
Hi.
Thank you so much for having us.
You guys have launched just the most amazing project, kind of as a reaction to what's going on in the world with the COVID-19 pandemic, all of the social and just political changes that have happened. And I don't know if you guys have come up with a name for it yet, but I love the quarantet idea. So,
to be honest, that might be the one that sticks.
Well, it's so interesting because you guys are launching the project on July 1st to request or actually get submissions for arrangements of music from games that happen post-apocalyptic or during some sort of really terrible medical thing. And so, I don't know who wants to go first, but I'd love to know how you guys got this idea.
I kind of came up with the idea, just as a formation in my head, and then approached the rest of the group. But really, the driving thought behind it for me was, when this happened, it happened in March. For me, March 13th was the day. And it was just kind of like, okay, this is going to pass. This is, and it kept on. And then after 6 weeks, it's like, oh my God, this is not going to pass quickly. What am I going to do as a musician? And it was kind of like starting to just think about the world differently. And part of it too was like, I want to figure out a way to represent a small slice of what is happening in 2020 and how are musicians responding? How do we keep reaching out? How do we stay connected with other people during this time? So that's kind of where my brain kind of went with that.
Yeah, the social aspect of it was kind of the most exciting thing for me too, was that it's a vehicle to bring people together from possibly all over the world, where we're able to share music and our expertise of the instrument, and then our expertise, I guess, is a strong word for our current recording abilities, but we're getting better as every day goes on. And we're just able to share that, which is a really welcoming experience in this kind of time where most of us haven't set foot outside for more than 10 minutes, 20 minutes to get groceries in 3 months. So,
yeah, and we're really leveling up our recording capabilities. And to a certain extent, I feel like we are lucky in the aspect that all of us have done some recording to some extent already, I'm sure we're all experiencing with our close musician friends and colleagues that the people that didn't have the opportunity to do that are now, sometimes struggling to learn and acquire these new skills, so we also feel fortunate to, be able to help out friends in that area. And it's also the idea of the project also not only keeps us as musicians active by playing and recording and doing all the things, but also keeps the composers and arrangers active by writing and collaborating with us. So it really is like a win-win situation, and we were happy to be able to turn this into a format where we could compensate the best arrangers and best arrangements.
Well, Eli, you're one of the original members of the quartet, so I'll bet it's been fun to kind of reconnect with Rosie and be part of the quartet for this project.
Absolutely, yeah. It's always nice to hear from Rosie. We catch up maybe once or twice a year anyway, but I'd been thinking about calling her during this quarantine anyway just to see how everything was going, and she called me one day just asking if I would be available and interested in doing this. And it's never a question in my mind of working with Videri. It's always a joy to do. So yeah, I mean, I'm beyond excited to work on this with them.
Yeah, I'm a little upset that I'm no longer the second longest running member of Videri String Quartet now. It's a little uncomfortable. I think I'm going to have to take that off of my title and business cards. That's
I mean, however, if we put in cumulative time, You still win.
Right. Well, let's talk about some of the timeline, maybe, so that people who are listening who might want to contribute an arrangement at least know kind of the general sense of the outline. The submissions are open now. There's a deadline on around August 1st to get your submission in. And the judging will start on August 23rd. And so I know, Rosie, you are not one of the judges, but you've got a very specialized skill with this whole project, which is if anyone has a question, they can turn to you.
Yeah, so when we were all talking as a group how to make this work, we realized that we have to give the composers, or we have to keep the composer, or I'm going to call them composers because I do really feel like this is, you know, they are changing it to their own composition, but they need to be anonymous. And we were like, how do we keep them anonymous? And, you know, at first I was thinking, okay, well, we ask someone outside the group, but that's a lot of work. So then we also were thinking, oh, well, if we had three judges, we're not going to have ties. So it kind of works. So my role went from being a judge to I will be assigning all the composers anonymous. I haven't decided if it's letters or numbers or a combination of both. And I will also be screening all questions. So if anybody has a question about will this arrangement work for your project, they can just email me and I can respond to keep everything completely anonymous.
And so what format should somebody send in their arrangement at this point?
The easiest that we were thinking was for that they would submit basically a full score and then individual parts as a written document. That sounds weird to call a music thing a document, but as a written document, and then some kind of MIDI playback so that way we can hear it much more quickly. The we're not going to be judging on the quality of the MIDI. Of course, like the more accurate it can be, the easier it is for us to hear. But of course, we're going to be taking like every MIDI track with a grain of salt, with the understanding that not everyone has the same level of like VST instruments and stuff like that. So basically a score with a playback is going to be the biggest forms of judgment for submission.
Well, I remember talking with Sky Lewin when he was working on a couple of pieces for Destiny 2 for the Kronos Quartet, and he admitted writing music for a quartet is really, really hard. And so what are you guys looking for in arrangements that are going to like be really standouts?
One of the things that I always think is very, very important is equal part distribution. Just because if one person is stuck playing offbeats for the violist, so one person is stuck playing offbeats
one
for
person,
the whole song,
wink, wink.
we don't want to play it. You know, it's not.
Just so you know, that's not a hint to give the viola all of the solos, though.
I did say equal distribution.
Yes. Well, I feel like, I don't know, just from a historical perspective, right, it started with like maybe somebody playing, you know, a high instrument like a violin, and then, you know, maybe two violins, and then, you know, they added a cello for a bass line, and then a viola, you know, to kind of like solidify. And then I guess like for a beginning of Haydn and a beginning of like history of quartets, it was kind of just like first violin show, right? But ever since like Beethoven, which wasn't much later after that, it was already kind of like established that like every voice in the quartet has its own you know, uniqueness, and you know, every voice is interesting in their own ways, and it's awesome when you can bring that out within a piece or an arrangement. And like part of it is also like it becomes a little bit of a game when you're shifting the attention from one instrument to another, and just being like, oh, look what that guy was doing. Oh, and then you, or that girl, sorry. And, you know, and feel something like, you know, it's like, oh, I wonder, and this is like maybe coming from a perspective of somebody who may have thought a lot about this, but, you know, it's, you know, in moments like that, I always ask myself, is like, I wonder what that person was doing right before that. Like, what have I missed? You know? And then it usually makes me go back and listen. And anyway, it's all fun stuff.
You know, a special gift that a lot of performers have, I don't happen to have it, but I know others do, is the ability to improvise. And Mateus and Eli, you guys are both really good at improv. And so it's, I guess, one of the aspects of the arrangements that people could submit have improv passages for the two of you. So maybe talk about, you know, the freedom that you'd like to have improvising on game themes in the context of these arrangements.
Yeah, it's certainly very cool to have a quartet that's able to and willing to improvise over some arrangements. Whenever I've been writing for the string quartet, knowing that there are players that can improvise, and I always try to put some options of that in there. Not that it has to be in there, but it's pretty cool to have like Mateus or myself get a chance to put some of ourselves into the arrangement like that. As long as it's not too much of the arrangement, obviously, you know, there needs to be the majority of it needs to be already worked out. But my background with improvisation, I grew up studying Suzuki violin in Nashville, where I grew up. My mom was a Suzuki violin teacher. But when I was in high school, I got really interested in learning kind of fiddle styles and jazz stuff and learning improvisation. I remember I'd learned this Mozart concerto and I wanted to write my own cadenza for it. But because I knew people used to do that and don't do it as much anymore, and I thought that was kind of a shame that it didn't happen as often anymore. So I spent most of my years in high school studying improvisation, and then I ended up going to Boston to Berklee College of Music to study jazz improvisation more than anything else, which is how I ended up meeting Rosie and then eventually everyone else in the quartet as well.
What would you consider your strong suit in improvisation?
And so my improvisation is more suited to kind of fiddle styles and jazz styles, which is opens up a lot of life in a lot of different arrangements.
I've heard your live performances, and it's they're really great because you do have this freedom rather than just sticking to the game's theme and the arrangement. So I think that's a really cool aspect of the recording. And Mateus, what about you? What's your improv background?
I was actually gonna add it is an interesting field, the field of like studying an instrument like the violin or viola or cello, because I would say like 99% of the time, it's not necessarily true that you are encouraged to really find your own voice. And I know this sounds really, really weird, but you spend most of your time trying to learn someone else's voice. I don't know if that makes sense. Yes. And not necessarily that that's a bad thing. You know, I feel like in a way, that's kind of like the only way you learn, just by the same way that like babies learn how to speak, right? It's kind of like it starts with the imitation of what they hear, right? And things like that. And I feel like in a way, like improvisation is a bridge between basically a composer and a performer, you know? So I feel like at some point, every composer improvises, you know? And then there are performers. And then, you know, kind of the improvisation is kind of like sitting in the middle, you know, and I always find fascinating whenever people like really dominate like a certain language, like of, let's say, just like of jazz or bluegrass, you know, like Eli does, which is like, to me, incredible. You know, I'm always kind of like dabbling and like I may like know how to speak like a few sentences here and there in each language, you know, but it's, you know, like having someone like Eli who like, you know, can tell a whole story in their improvisation is just like something really, really, really cool. It makes me super, super excited and wanting to just like learn more and do stuff.
Wow. Well, and what's also cool about that is, you know, any performance is just one moment in time. And so to have that improv, it's not going to ever happen that way ever again. And so it's really cool that it'll be part of the album, assuming that the arrangers give you guys that freedom. I think that's really great.
And I guess too, for me, like, you know, when Eli came on board with this project, like, I know Eli, I've known Eli for a very long time. And I've heard him many times, and it's just being able to open up the scope of the project. So instead of it being like, yes, you have to write a classical string arrangement of this, it's like, no, you like, we're expanding our experiences as a quartet, and we don't want to limit like, basically we don't want to limit anything. And so allowing someone who is more of, you know, a jazz background, trying to give them.
Yeah.
Well, and even being welcoming to that type of thing. Cause you know, it's like typically a string quartet contest, you know, like you would be expected to write something specifically for string quartet and not necessarily like bluegrass or jazz. And we don't want to exclude those people.
Well, especially if you think about it, because the music from games, a lot of the composers that I've talked with, they started out with a really traditional foundation of composing or performing, but they've since gone off and they do all kinds of stuff now. So it's not necessarily classical. So I think having that freedom and not feeling locked into, you know, making a traditional Haydn sounding quartet is going to give people a lot more incentive to try new stuff.
Yeah, just to kind of clarify a little bit, though, like we would love to have these different styles of arrangements, but we want to also make sure that, because like we can't receive a submission that's like just chords and then like the violins will be improvising the whole melody, basically, you know. So like we were kind of thinking that like you can, if you're going to write something, say you want to write an arrangement in a jazz style or a bluegrass style, the whole thing can be in that style, with the cello and the viola part fully written out, please, because I can't do that at all for a long time. I can't do that by the time we record, that's for sure. But basically we're thinking like one phrase or like 10-15% of the arrangement itself can be basically open to improvisation from either Eli or Mateus, or maybe they can do some kind of split down the middle, but kind of not limiting to the style, but limiting how much of the composition itself can be improvised, I think is just a good clarification to have.
And, you know, people can take these arrangements in so many different directions. And, you know, the whole form of the quartet has been around now for, gosh, almost 300 years. And so there are so many different styles, but you as a quartet perform, you know, really just straight ahead, you know, Haydn style quartets and branch out. So I guess the real takeaway from all of this, from this little discussion, is that, you know, people can submit their arrangements in really any style, right?
Yeah. And even, you know, like we do play traditional string quartet repertoire, but I feel like one of the whole main things about Videri is that we like to push boundaries. Like we are playing video game music because it means a lot to us, and we end up having to do a lot of different things. And it's like, yes, we all love playing classical music. Yes, we all love playing video game music, and, you know, like obviously bluegrass and jazz as well. So we want, in a sense, we want this competition to be open to anyone's interpretation of what string quartets can or should do.
Yeah, it's a really big tent is what
yeah. Just like video game music.
Exactly. Yeah.
It encompasses all genres.
Well, you guys have worked with some really incredible arrangers. I'm thinking of David Peacock in particular, who does a fantastic job, you know, kind of giving everybody an equal voice and moving the theme around from one instrument to another and playing with the theme a little bit, breaking it up. So it's there in a subtle way, but you still know what game it's from. And so I imagine you guys are all really excited to hear what other arrangers are going to do with the submissions.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that I really am.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to actually even work with people that don't have that much experience with string quartet, because sometimes we find that actually makes us view it in a different way too. We think of different importances in arrangements, and we find different ways to be able to like grow as a quartet and grow as musicians, where we're learning from this composition process too. So I'm pretty excited about that aspect of it.
Yeah, definitely. You sent me a really wonderful kind of one sheet about the project, and there are some games that you guys have already thought of that have really great scores, and they're just amazing. And I remember when I was talking with Nathan Whitehead about his score for Days Gone, which is, you know, on that list and just an amazing post-apocalyptic game, he said what he was really looking for in the music was to reflect the humanity of the main character, Deacon, and his girlfriend, but also the little shreds of humanity that were left with, well, they call them freakers in Days Gone, but the zombies. And so I'm wondering, you know, as you guys, I know you don't have a lot of time to play games, but what are some of the scores that you guys have really appreciated from games like this for the music?
For me, I mean, The Last of Us is obviously up there. It's just, it's the score itself is very evocative. But then games like the Resident Evil series, you feel so immersed in the music and in the sound design of those games, just as much as like thinking of Resident Evil 4, the over the shoulder camera angle is just as much the music and sound design is just as much a part of the horror aspect as that camera, you know, which is so immersive. Those are kind of the two that stand out to me, aside from something like Days Gone.
Well, to be honest, I haven't played many of these games in that style. I don't do so great with a little bit of the more apocalyptic style games. I'm a happy gamer, but I played Prototype, but that was, gosh, probably eight years ago, maybe now, I think. Yeah. That's right. My roommate had it and we played it together some. And I liked Prototype. Actually, I liked that one a lot, but I haven't played a whole lot of these games, and so I need to familiarize myself more with them, to be honest.
So, what about Bloodborne?
Yeah. I've never played Bloodborne.
Yeah, Bloodborne's an incredible game.
Yeah, I've never played it, but I mean, I have to say that I have watched people play it quite a bit. And yeah, it's a fascinating game. Mm-hmm. Music is really good too.
Well, and one thing that I want to say about this too is that it's like it just has to reflect some aspect of the quarantine, and not everything has been terrible. I think that we talked about that earlier. Like, we were talking about people having to adapt and people coming up with good ideas. Like, there's a silver lining in all of this. So I don't want people to enter this contest thinking it's like, oh, it all has to be doom and gloom. It's like, no, there's hope. People are doing things. There is hope with this. So, like, you know, the happy gamers, it's like there is still something that, you know, again, like, you just have to figure a way to tie it in. Like, we are open to all types of suggestions.
Yeah, otherwise it's going to be a really grim album. So
yeah. I mean, because, like, even in those games, the pandemics or diseases or viruses, they're the kind of crux of the whole game, but the story arc and the development of the characters, that's where you really feel, as a player, you feel connected to the game and you feel the want to come back and replay the story. Or even you just, like, end the game completely demolished by the storyline, the story arc, in sometimes a good way, where you feel hopeful, you feel like there's something moving forward. So yeah, of course, hopefully the whole album's not a doom and gloom thing, but has a glimmer of hope there too.
Well, you guys touched on a monetary reward, and I should have mentioned this more toward the beginning of our conversation, because it is a contest. There will be a winning entry and listener's choice, and the top contributions are going to fill out the album. So Rosie, why don't you explain about how the reward system is working for this?
So I think I have to maybe start with the judging process to explain the reward system. And we're hoping to get a significant number of entries, and there's just no way for us to, like, if we get like 20 or 30 entries, you know, or more, there's no way for us to record all of them. So we're actually going to be doing our first round of judging based on the MIDIs and scores that are sent in, and then we're going to take the top 40 to 50 minutes, because we can't, like, put a number, so it's like we're going to just
depends
take
on how long the tracks are and
right. Mm-hmm. So the top 40 to 50 minutes, we will record every single one of those tracks, and then after we've recorded, we're going to choose, like, the top track that we'll get the $200.
The whole thought behind that was we'd pick the ones that would fill out the album based on the playbacks, and that gives us at least the rough idea of what the whole album's going to sound like. And then around that, the things that we've connected with the most and the arrangements that have kind of touched us the most are the ones that are going to be receiving the monetary prizes. So like in a way, we're trying to be even more fair with who wins by like the things that we are able to come up with from the arrangement itself.
Mm-hmm. And also, I guess it's also important to point out the fact that like if you make into the album as an arranger, you'll also be entitled to royalties.
From all digital sales.
All digital sales, yeah. So.
Yeah, everything on the album, so all the recorded pieces on the album, the arranger / composer will get 50% of the royalties.
The album is going to be only released digitally, and we thought it was kind of appropriate to not have like physical CDs on an album based around disease and pandemics and viruses and stuff like that, because it's like,
and lack of, you know, physical, it's just contact.
It's the lack of physical contact where it's only distributed digitally, so
goes with the whole theme.
Yeah. Wow. And there's a great breakdown of everything, all your expectations for submissions and the list of games, and that's all on your website. And remind me, it's viderisq.com.
Yes.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of stuff for people to look over. And you know, you mentioned that there are a lot of positive aspects of this, and you know, making connections and new connections. And I would hope that one of them would be somebody who's never considered arranging for a string quartet might find that this is a really great opportunity to do that. So that could be like another really positive angle for this.
Yeah, and I know I'm willing to do this, but as time permits, with the submissions that we receive that possibly we don't choose, I know I would feel the need to give an explanation as to why, so that even if they submit something but it doesn't pass through to getting on the album, they can at least have some constructive criticism as to like what can be improved, why it possibly didn't fit, or just growing mutually from that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, one of the things that I've really enjoyed watching you perform is the eye contact and the body language and all these subtle things that you guys, how you communicate when you're performing in person. And so it must have been such a, and probably still is, a really steep learning curve to figure out how you're going to play together. And so what are some of the ways that you've like worked that out?
So I just have to say that is the thing I miss the most about being in quarantine is not having, like, you know, it's like at this point I have been playing with Jeremiah so long that when he breathes, I know what he's going to do. So, sorry, Jeremiah.
You guys can't see this, but I'm really uncomfortable now.
Well, I'm talking like within the quartet, of course, like, but you know, just like, you know, like you do have this incredible connection, and that is, I think, one of the most difficult things about the quarantine is not just within a quartet, but even connection with other people. So, I think we have, you know, we're doing the best with what we can.
Yeah, and Eli, you're joining them from Nashville, so. Does that create any additional challenges, or is it just, you know, you could be across town and, but just not in the same room?
Well, I guess, you know, with the way everything is now, it's kind of the only way we can record. I mean, when I was in Videri in the beginning and then moved back to Nashville, it was like, you know, I can't be a part of a quartet if I'm not in the same city. So that was the main reason for me not continuing with Videri during that time. And so I feel fortunate that because of how everything is right now, I get a chance to play with a quartet again like this. But it is certainly difficult not to be in the same room as the rest of the members playing this stuff. But I was recording something just a couple days ago that all three of them had already tracked on, and it was really fun actually to do it, because I just kept re-recording, because I would hear something that somebody had played and I thought, oh, I need to match that better, or I need to match that better there. And so, you know, after working on something that was not a very long or difficult piece, but having spent a lot of time on it, it felt like I was playing with them more so then, but obviously it's not nearly the same as playing in person with everybody. But I was surprised actually at how realistic it was feeling to me, because I'm used to sitting at home and just recording myself, you know, a few times over, and it's not nearly the same kind of life that is there when three other people have recorded those parts.
I'm going to butt in there for a second and just say that, like, yeah, we're in on that aspect. We're also kind of like experimenting. And so far, Jeremiah has had probably the shortest end of the stick every single time, because we usually ask him to record first so we can basically tune to his part, you know. So then he doesn't get the joy, but like the same joy that others, you know, others of us may get. But like, yes. Yeah, it stems from him, exactly. But anyway, I was gonna say, like, you know, in one of the little arrangements or projects we did recently, I remember once I was one of the first to record together with Jeremiah, and it, you know, felt one way, and then for another project, you know, I already had multiple stems from others to work with. And it makes a huge difference when you're playing and you're listening to them, you know, in your ear. In a way, they're like very, very close. In a way, like closer than in reality, you know. And then it is a different experience. It's a different experience, and you know, we're experimenting with different ways. I'm hoping to try to give everyone, I think, like a chance to experience that. I think maybe, you know, like doing like a preliminary recording and then recording again or something. I don't know. It'll be fun.
We do use a click track just to for mostly just to play together, but then we try to be as free within the music itself. So we line up where we have to, but there's still that little bit of ebb and flow that you kind of learn from playing together for so long that, like, even though there is a click track, there's still the sense of flexibility.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about, because otherwise, you know, I've worked with a metronome and I know how it can kind of like suck the life out of a phrase because you've got to stick to that rhythm. And so working, yeah, having the ebb and flow even with the click track must have been an interesting skill to develop.
And, you know, I was also going to chime in, like, even working with the metronome, there are, like, different levels you can work with a metronome, right? Especially, like, nowadays, like, that metronomes might not only be limited by that little weight, you know? So you can get, like, a frequency of beats that's incredibly slow. And let's say, like, you want, you know, you may start working on a piece where you want, like, every beat to line up, you know, at first. And then, so you will have, like, you know, a metronome at, let's say, like, 90, the piece, whatever, depending on the tempo, right? And then, like, and let's say you want a little bit more freedom, you know, in every half of the bar. Then you put the metronome into 45, or, you know, if it was 100. I should have picked a better number to start with, right?
Ah. Enjoy that math, yeah.
No.
We'll be here a while.
No. But anyway, okay, let's say it was 80. Then, you know, 40 for half of the bar. And then you can have, like, literally one click for either every downbeat. So every four beats, you have basically all the freedom that you want. Then, you know, then you can take it even further to have it at BPM 10 and then see if you can keep, kind of like a general sense of momentum in every two bars, you know? And, I don't know, those are all fun things. So
I think one thing that we haven't talked about that I think it's important for everyone to know is the way we record. And so what we have been doing is Jeremiah records, and then we will all record it at different times. Like, typically I, as the violist, have been recording second. So it's like, we're not recording all four separately and then putting it together. It's something we build upon. So we are able, like what Eli was saying, is it's like, we are able to react. We still are able to play with each other. It's not just like, oh, I think Mateus is going to do this here, so I'm going to do it this way. It's like, I actually get to hear him if he's already recorded.
And then we have the benefit of going back and just being like, I'm going to touch this up. It's almost like, instead of, I don't know, the difference, I guess, is just like, it's instead of like live juggling, you're more like working on a painting, you know, where you can like look at it and then just be like, oh, okay, I'm gonna add this little detail, or you know, and do things like that. I mean, recording allows for that. So
especially if you're painting in oil, because it takes so long for the paint to dry, you can really make really subtle adjustments and stuff. I just had this thought, you know, what if in a month or so, 2 months, there is no quarantine? I don't know if that's going to happen, but have you guys talked at all about the possibility of performing together and getting a space?
So I actually thought that's a great idea. We had talked about this a little bit, about whether or not we should get together. And in a way, we thought it fit the theme of the album better, even if things were open enough that we would all feel comfortable getting together, that it still makes sense to record separately, to have that slight bit of isolation, that slight like eeriness that comes from recording separately. It's kind of just like a cool additional thing that is a part of it's part of the album, you know, where we record separately and then put it all together. And I was thinking this too while you guys were talking about the click track. It's like, in a way, this also opens up for people that are not just interested in composing for video games, but people that have a background in film scoring or anything in other kinds of media, where they have to work to a click track very often. You know, like people in advertising, they work to a click track. Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it's like a skill that a lot of people outside of the game community also have. And it's a nice way to like bring people in to like make the game community, video game music community, bigger by bringing other people in too. It's more inclusive that way.
And also, I think that a big point of the album is really to document this aspect of the year, you know. And I feel like we have been quarantined enough to have felt that it has affected all of us in a way, you know. And having the album, even though you know, if it happens that, you know, that we are able to meet in person afterwards, will still serve as a document, you know, of this year, of 2020, you know, so.
Yeah, definitely. You know, what are some of the takeaways that you hope people will get from the album? I mean, I guess obviously that it's a document of this year, but is there anything else that you're hoping, you know, it'll help people grow as arrangers maybe, or grow the repertoire for game music, for string quartets, obviously, but have you thought about anything else that you're really hoping will be a positive thing to come out of this?
For me, it's about hope. You know, it's about not allowing this to stop us from creating music. You know, so that's really what it is for me. It's instead of letting this situation that is very, very horrible and very hard to deal with. And, you know, it's like, I know, like for myself, the mental strain has been huge, but it's not stopping us. Like we won't quit. And that's, you know, that's, I think one thing that's incredible about music in general, like, so what? Pandemic, we're going to keep playing.
And also, I think like, it also, there's this like, kind of like what Jeremiah was saying, there's this educational aspect as well. You know, I feel like there are, you know, if you're studying composition or arranging or anything like that, there oftentimes you are given a certain set of instructions to, let's say, kind of like push yourself to maybe go out of your comfort zone a little bit and see what you get out of that experience, you know. So like at the same time that we kind of define this theme of post of pandemic, or you know, kind of post-apocalyptic kind of scene, that may be something that that may be a theme that an arranger or a composer has never thought of doing, and may not be necessarily comfortable doing it. And that's, I think, when I hope, and the hope comes back, you know, and I hope that like that may really incentivize somebody to get out of that comfort zone and just be like, just try, go for it, and see what happens out of that experience. You know, I think I personally think that there's only things to gain from this. But you know,
Well, and also, I think having the finished album to look forward to, and you're planning a release date in December, which seems like a long way off, and so many things could really change between now and then, but just to have that kind of light at the end of the tunnel with the album release, I think is a great positive thing, too.
Yes, and we set it for December just from experience by knowing how long it takes to produce an album, so.
Well, yeah. And we don't want to cut corners, you know, we want this to be something we're all very proud of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, again, all this information is on your website, VidariSQ.com, and it's such an exciting project. It's so much fun to think about people coming together from really all over the world to help out with this and build something that is really, really, really unique. So Rosie and Mateus and Jeremiah and Eli, it's been so much fun to talk with all of you about this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.